Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 the game on this Thursday. Hope you're having a good start to your day. We say hello now to Greg Wyshynski, senior NHL writer with ESPN, brought to you by Old National Bank. Get old. Greg, good morning. How you doing?
Do the Predators understand we need them to go like 17 games without a loss? Like this?
I know.
We had some mojo and we had the five in a row. But it's like, you know, three steps forward and four stumbles back for this team all season. And I got to be honest with you. Like I was starting to believe a little bit during that winning streak. But right back to where we were before in the last couple of games.
Well, and it's I was there last night too. It's the same thing where it's like you watch the game and you see that. You know, I mean, they're getting the shots. They're just not the quality shots that are going to get past the goalie. And that's what's so frustrating is, like, they're bringing the pressure, but they can't score. And, like, Thatcher Demko's no slouch by any means, but they had some looks on him last night that I'm thinking this game should be, like, 4-2.
They got goalied a little bit last night. Like, Demko's played pretty well in his last few games. He sort of figured something out after really – being very underwhelming for most of the season when he's played for Vancouver because he's missed a ton of time with injury. But you're right. And I'll say this as a ray of sunshine. The numbers nerds at Stathletes, who we work with at ESPN, still have the Predators with a somewhat inexplicable 20% chance of making the playoffs. But
wow.
Yet, that is a chance to make the playoffs. And again, the real issue for me and Nashville right now is insofar as any kind of miraculous run to make the cut is the fact that you're basically down to one spot in the West. I mean, even without Rantanen, I think Colorado's a playoff team. You're not catching the other three in the Central, which means you're pretty much down to one wild card spot, and it's Vancouver and Calgary and, you know, maybe Utah, maybe Nashville, but it's one spot. I mean, if this is musical chairs, we're in the end game now, and I don't know if the Preds are going to be able to overcome the other contenders for that last spot.
So as we enter trade deadline season, and you know Barry Trotz comes on our station every week and talks about this stuff, but he's been honest of I want to stay in this as long as I can, but I also know that I have to be realistic and I have to look at the future. Gus Nyquist is a guy that I think a team in contention would love to have right now. What do you think the market is going to be for him, and is there anybody else on Nashville's roster that stands out as a potential deadline move?
Well, we'll start with Nyquist because obviously with an expiring contract, a guy with a ton of experience and a player that is a pretty, even at his age, still a pretty accomplished goal scorer. I do think that there are going to be teams that want to boost their overall offense and their, let's say, in their top nine with a player like that. But that's a trade where you're looking at, you know, a draft pick at most or maybe a mid-level prospect at most coming back the other way. The Preds obviously do have one retained salary spot left. They're still retaining on Johansson. They're still retaining on Ekholm. But the Johansson retention goes away after this season. I mentioned that because obviously, you know, Nyquist is one of the few guys that's on an expiring contract. The Predators have a ton of people with term. They have a ton of people that are signed for the next two seasons, this one and the next one. And so when you start to get into that conversation of like, if you're going to prune the roster of somebody who has maybe 2 years left on their deal, then you get into that conversation of, okay, well, do you make that trade with retention of salary? Is the low contract number enough for someone to acquire them? And it becomes a more nuanced conversation about how Barry sees this team and whether he wants to double down going into next season or if he thinks there needs to be a more aggressive retooling before the deadline.
Speaking of the Ryan Johansson situation, did you find out any more on that?
You know, I dropped a note to the Flyers, and I didn't hear back, which, I don't know, that might speak volumes. But nothing new. You gave me homework. I guess I could say maybe I read the book but didn't do the report. Maybe we'll leave it there. But I'll circle back with them too. Hey, listen, they got bigger fish to fry than to talk to me, man. They got John Tortorella, you know, playing Mitch Kopf like 9 minutes a night or whatever over there. So they got to figure out something.
Greg Wyshynski from ESPN is with us.
Greg, is there any collateral damage from this, the Preds not playing up to par? Other teams looking like, all right, we're going to bring in two or three big-name superstars together from different backgrounds. Will there be some hesitation now, do you think, because this has not gone as planned for the Predators?
No, I think every team's got their own plan. I mean, I honestly think, you know, I haven't talked to any GMs in particular about this, but I'll go ahead and make an informed speculation guess that when you have a team like Nashville that seemed like they were on the come up, that you know, really got rolling last year and had some good young players and seemed like they had some offensive pop that could use some augmentation, that bringing in the three guys that they bought in probably wasn't necessarily frowned upon. I mean, you know, there's a lot of teams that would have loved to have added Steven Stamkos. There's a lot of teams that would have loved to have added Jonathan Marchessault. So I think logically, if you've got the resources from your ownership and you think that you have a chance to shoot your shot, I think it makes sense. And the other thing about it too, obviously, is that, you know, Barry has talked before about playing the long game, about having these guys come in, knowing that there's some bodies in the pipeline they're excited about, and then just trying to maybe like transition over to that. But at the same time also try to contend. So I don't know. I don't think that teams are going to be wary about, you know, signing a few big free agents and trying to maybe do what the Predators did, which is take a team on the bubble and see if you can, you know, throw some nitro on them and all of a sudden they're winning the race. But it is a cautionary tale about you never know how these things are going to work out when the group does hit the ice.
And that's the thing. I'm nowhere near a hockey expert. I'm just a huge Predator fan, and a lot of friends of mine are as well. And I think the thing is, Greg, is we're trying to wrap our mind around this. Like, how are they not better? And I don't think we've come up with an answer. And it's kind of befuddling and mind-boggling and every other thing you want to use that why is this team not better? And it just drives us crazy.
Well, it's a combination of a really bad start that I think kind of knocked them on their collective behinds as far as, you know, the feelings that you feel at the beginning of the season. I remember talking to Roman Josi at an event here in New York before the season, right after they had those big acquisitions, and he was beaming. Like, I mean, this guy really thought that this was going to be a gigantic leap forward for the franchise, maybe to the point where they're a cup contender with the amount of talent they're bringing in. And so when the gears aren't turning in the right direction, when the machine is malfunctioning in the way that it did so early this season, I just think it's hard to recalibrate. It's hard to all of a sudden be digging yourself out of a hole. You start doubting yourself. You start doubting the team. You start doubting a lot of it. If what you assume was going to be a pretty fun ride all of a sudden becomes, you know, trudge work to come to practice every day because the team's not good. So, you know, I think the start is the real culprit here. And then, as we mentioned off the top, the inability to really kind of keep the momentum going when they build it. It kind of reminds me of, like, you know, when you're watching like Survivor and they're trying to make a fire, you know what I mean? Like, they get the spark, there's some smoke, they're getting really excited. And then all of a sudden the thing goes out and you're just like, ah, damn it, we got to try again. So I think it's been that kind of season for the Predators.
I laugh at this. Anytime a team goes to the fans to name anything, it's usually chaotic. This whole Utah thing with me, Greg, it gets better each day because the names Mammoth, the hockey club, and the Wasatch, is that correct?
So to catch everybody up, they tried to go with Yeti and Yetis, and to their chagrin, they discovered there's a company that makes some coolers, containers, that is named Yeti. That is pretty ubiquitous. That is something people recognize as a brand. And so, you know, if the Utah Yeti are trying to sell a cup with Yeti on it, that becomes kind of a trademark issue, as the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office pointed out pretty aggressively. So they held a media press conference yesterday that I was a part of to basically announce that they're punting on Yeti. Like, they can't get it through. They couldn't work with the Yeti company to figure out a way for them to use the brand. They love the name, but it's just not workable with someone else having that trademark. So like you said, now we're down to three options that the fans are going to vote on at the Utah games beginning last night and for the next three home games. And it's Utah Hockey Club, Utah Mammoth, which was one of the names that they originally had fans vote on. And it actually was in the top four, I think, choices before they really went double down on Yeti. And then the Utah Wasatch. Now, what the hell is that? Okay, well, I'll tell you. It's the name of a mountain range in Utah And basically what they've done is say, look, we've got all this really cool stuff we made for Yeti. We've got logos. We've got a big, you know, adorable mascot that's going to be at the games and all this stuff. We can't use the name, so we'll just go with this mountain range name, and then the mascot's a Yeti. That's pretty much what it is. They made up a snow creature that's living in these mountains that is a Yeti, but they can't use the name Yeti, so they're hoping somebody votes for this. If they go with Hockey Club or Wasatch, then it's going to be all the Yeti stuff that they already designed. But if they go with Mammoth, then it'll be like a woolly mammoth, like, you know, the big Ray Romano woolly mammoth from Ice Age kind of thing. So that's what we're left with now. I don't know why they couldn't just, you know, go with Outlaws at the beginning, which was an awesome name.
Yep. Yeah.
But now we're like, now we're the problem with Wasatch is that this is my test for any team nickname. If you're drafted by the team, you have to be able to say, I'm proud to be a blank when you're drafted. That's why I don't like the Miami Heat. I'm proud to be a Heat. It sounds stupid. I'm proud to be a Wasatch. I don't even know what it means. You can't even shorten it. Terrible name.
I'm with you on that one. You're not going to get any pushback from me on that one. That's fantastic. Greg, appreciate the time as always. We'll do it again next week.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Greg Wyshynski joining us here on the program, as he does every Thursday at 9:30, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. We'll react to some of that.
What were the Titans' names?
I will look that up, because supposedly there's a whole uniform set and a logo and stuff that never saw the light of day.
But didn't they have to get it from the Jet? Didn't the Jets own the Titans' name?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We'll look that up in the break. Chase and Big Joe, live at the Omni Nashville Hotel, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.